Welcome to the Narrators Podcast. I'm Robert Rutherford.
And I'm Andrew Orvidal. This podcast collects stories that were told at the Narrators, a monthly storytelling event that features people telling true stories based on a theme.
The show takes place on the third Wednesday of every month at the Buntport Theater in Denver, Colorado.
These stories were recorded live on July 18th, 2014, as part of a special collaboration with Pivot TV and Rooftop Comedy. The theme of the evening was taking a stand.
On the theme of taking a stand, I was going to tell a story about how I had an opportunity in my life to take a stand, and I didn't, and I've regretted it ever since, but I decided not to do that because, A, I've told that story at a Narrators a few years ago, and B, I wanted to start more positive than like, I'm a failure at taking a stand. Because when I looked at my life, I was like, I feel like I've never really taken a stand for anything. But then I realized I only think that because I equate taking a stand with getting what you want. Like, I've been fooled by so many movies where like there's this heartwarming climax where everyone is standing up for something, and then the greedy land developer realizes the error of their ways and like turns the townhomes into like a daycare center for low-income families or something. Like, I see that, but that's not real life at all. So I sort of had to like dig through this like bucket of disappointments to find these instances where I took a stand. In 2000, I went vegan, and some of you may be vegan or you may know a vegan, but I went vegan like if you are into the Bible, which maybe no one in this room is, including me. But I've read it. I had like a Saul to Paul conversion to veganism, where like I was only eating Pizza Hut and Wendy's, and the next day I was like making my own envelopes level of vegan. Like that's the level of veganism I adopted. I wouldn't loan my friends money unless they could tell me what that money was going to be used for, but somehow I still have friends after that happened, which is crazy. So I got really into the animal rights movement. I was collecting ALF literature and sabotaging meat at the grocery store. Really mature choices that I was making. But I got involved with an animal rights organization here in Denver, who will remain nameless, and I started doing work with them. And one of our big campaigns was for prairie dogs. We were trying to save prairie dogs, some people laugh right now. Some people will laugh. Because for most people, a prairie dog is like on the level of a housefly. You're like, yeah, that's why did prairie dogs even exist? Why is that even a thing? But they're actually a pretty important part of the prairie ecosystem. We can talk about it after the show. But they build these cool underground colonies, which are terrible news if you're trying to build a Walmart supercenter on the outskirts of your city to like suck your city dry. Like, you can't build it if there's a prairie dog colony, so they have to kill all the prairie dogs, so we were trying to save these prairie dogs. So we got wind of some a prairie dog action down in Aurora. They were going to... See, people just laugh. Prairie dog action. You just laugh because it sounds ridiculous. Okay, pretend I'm saying kittens. Pretend we're going to save a prairie of kittens so you can contextualize this. So they were going to build a detention pond, and they needed to get rid of this prairie dog colony. It was right across the road from Cherry Creek State Park, which makes sense that prairie dogs would even be there. Like, they were in Cherry Creek State Park, and then they had some sort of like scouting mission across the road, and they were like, yes, we'll also build here. And then they had to go. But the reasons for the detention pond made sense, but we wanted them to relocate the prairie dogs, because that's apparently a thing also. They have a truck that will vacuum them out of their colonies. I'm not making this up. It'll vacuum out, and then you can drive them out to a farther prairie that has not been developed yet, and then you let them go to probably have to repeat that again in like 2 years. But so we were going to protest and be there so that they wouldn't come kill them. We're like, well, we're going to be there. We're going to put bodies in their way. So we went out there, and we stood on the sidewalk, and we had signs advocating these prairie dogs' lives, which made a lot of people laugh driving by, like some of you laughed here. We got a lot of laughter, and we sat out there all day, you know, and the truck to gas them never showed up. And so we stood out there all day and got laughed at and ridiculed. And at the end of the day, we got word that Corps of Engineers was going to talk about it. Like, they were like, okay, well, we'll talk about this. We'll discuss this. So we're like, awesome. That was awesome. So I went home for the night. And the next morning, we all got a phone call that they just came in the night and killed them all anyway. Because when you own the land, you can just lie to someone and tell them, yeah, we'll chat about it. And then you can just go in the night and kill them anyway. And that's, you can just get away with that. A few years after that, I decided, in addition to caring about animals, I would also care about human animals. And I went down to Colorado Springs to protest George W. Bush sending troops to Iraq. And while people think it's funny to protest saving prairie dogs in Aurora, Colorado, protesting sending troops in Colorado Springs goes over like hot shit. It was... No one laughed. Everyone just hated us a lot. People were so angry. Because in Colorado Springs, you're saying, like, you're basically like, I don't want anyone in this town to have a livelihood. If you're, like, if you're protesting against some sort of military action. And they were so angry, they would throw drinks at us from their car. And as you could probably guess, unsurprisingly, that drink was invariably Mountain Dew. It was Mountain Dew every time. And I remember standing on Academy Boulevard, and I remember thinking how thankful I was for America's soda consumption, because they were these big 1 liter bottles of Mountain Dew, which were easy to see and easy to dodge, and they just sort of like ponged around you, like bang, bang, bang. Just, but there was a lot of them, and just the action of it, though, was like, you're such a jerk that you would just throw this, because their intent was like, oh no, I just got hit and got concussed by a half full liter of warm Mountain Dew. Which didn't happen. So we stood there, and then we went to Fort Carson Army Base, I think is what it's called. I think so. Fort Carson. And we protested there, and then a group of people lined up for civil disobedience, and they got arrested. And then the cops told us all to disperse, or we would get tear gassed. So we went to a nearby strip mall, and people were just sort of dejected, as they will after being threatened with tear gas and having to leave a place. So we're in the strip mall, and we went into this Dairy Queen, and... we were like just getting treats from this Dairy Queen. And then these police officers came in with these guys in like black overcoats and like black aviator sunglasses, like right out of a Tom Clancy novel. They were already in the military, but apparently that wasn't enough. They wanted to look like as cool Tom Clancy style as they could. So they came in with the police officers and they're like, we need to speak to the manager of this establishment right away. We're going in the back. And so the manager is like this little like 50-year-old man with like a clip-on tie. He's managing a Dairy Queen on a Saturday. He just wants to get to like the end of his day. And this like goon squad of terrifying dudes takes him into the back, and it's a really short meeting. And then they come back up to the front and the cops announce, anyone not actively buying Dairy Queen has to leave immediately. And we're like, what does that mean? Like, what does that mean? They're like, anyone not actively purchasing. You can't sit in this Dairy Queen. You have to buy something and then immediately leave. And we were like, this is so weird. Like, why is there this like military action in a Dairy Queen? And then we realized it was because they were trying to clear the parking lot. They were like sweeping the parking lot and making everyone leave. It wasn't enough that we had already left the military base. It's like they were just like a big broom trying to just kind of sweep us all the way out of Colorado Springs. So I was already in line, and I was like, I'm going to buy the fucking Mr. Misty or whatever. Like, I am. I'm going to buy something. Just, like, terrified, but, like, stuck having to buy something now in a Dairy Queen. And this guy came in out of the parking lot, and then he came inside, and they're like, you have to actively be buying something, or you can't be in it. And so he turned around and left, and then the cops grabbed him, and they zip-tied him right there in front of the Dairy Queen. It was, like, this crazy, like, arrest trap that the cops created in this Dairy Queen. So I got my treat, and I left, and I drove back to Denver disheartened and not cheered up by that Dairy Queen at all. But then as I was like thinking through my life at these examples of taking a stand for something, they just sort of like washed away and just became a constant picture of Facebook. Because like a lot of people in this room, I think I consume a lot and participate a little in Facebook activism, I guess I would call it. And that's where you just get to sit back in your chair and find outrageous things and then vomit them up onto Facebook, where people will either argue with you about them, or you can like masturbate your egos simultaneously on the same subject. It's like, Facebook is like the biggest, most overstuffed armchair of activism possible, basically. It's like, and I came to my last straw recently someone posted this like horrifying picture of this like dead kid from the Israeli-Palestine violence, and it was like the last. I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you that you think that this is having? It's sandwiched between like a dog driving a car video, and like you won't believe how hedgehogs can dance, and you think that this is like. You think that this is going to have some sort of effect. It's nothing. And I realized that, like, that is what my... I've, like, sort of let what I would consider my activism become, just being on Facebook. And when I thought about it, I was like, I would rather be laughed at and lied to and fooled and have Mountain Dew bottles thrown at me and see martial law come to a Dairy Queen than to give that up on Facebook like I have. So that's it for me. Thanks, you guys. Storyteller, I brought along as my co-host a couple years ago, and he's like helped the show definitely transform from. It was like a little show in the back of a wine bar, and it was pretty cool. And now here we are, like having to turn people away, like real jerks on a Friday night, and able to bring in special guests. So it's so cool to see how the show has changed. But this is his last show as the co-host. He's going to move to San Diego, and he's going to start a chapter of our narrator show out there in San Diego, which is awesome. But makes me sad because he's the best co-host ever. Please welcome the one and only Robert Rutherford.
That's my good friend Andrew Orvidal. Give it up for him. What an amazing gift for this to be sort of my last show before I head west. Thank you all so much for being here for the show. I took notes, which is pretty funny because it's just five words. I don't know why I did that. I think these are going to be worthless. It just says cat. Protest. Protest cats. That's what this is about. I'm taking a stand against those feline motherfuckers. And I want you to join me. But in all seriousness, I was driving so fast, or I should say just fast enough, that when I actually saw the cat, it was already a foregone conclusion. Our paths met just outside of Lander, Wyoming, on a cold, snowy night. And I was probably going 75, and I caught it just long enough in my headlights to know that I couldn't swerve, and I saw its face. And I didn't read fear. I didn't read startlement. I just, it was a, not that cats like are, have expressive faces, but I've thought about it so much and I see it still and I look back to it and I saw it. It went under my car. I heard a very small, dull thud that I assume was my front axle meeting its head. And anyone who knows me knows that there's two things that I really like in the world, and that's cats and little kids. And so I thought about it, and I still think about it. I'm talking about it now. It's been probably 10, 12 years. I was working at a record store here in town. I was working at a vinyl store over on Alameda Street when I heard that the city of Denver was giving a whole bunch of tax subsidies and public art commissions and all of these things to a new outdoor-style mall on the 16th Street Mall as a way to reinvigorate commerce on the 16th Street Mall. It was going to be called the Denver Pavilions, and they were bringing in all of these anchor stores like Barnes & Noble and a Virgin store and a Starbucks and anything else you could think of that would go into a space like that you can find anywhere in the world. And something about it raised the ire of the indignant youth in me. Because I was really pissed that this city and I don't remember what year this was when it opened, but this city that was trying to revitalize itself was doing so only through throwing money to lure giant corporations, while the record store that I worked at, which was doing relatively well, But we were still having, you know, we, it was sort of feast or famine, and there were layoffs, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't great. And they were trying to do really well by their employees and their community. And it just, for whatever reason, it really made me mad. So I decided to protest the opening of that mall. And so I've actually, when I was thinking about this topic and what I was going to talk about, I didn't want it to just, like, I think you can come up here and just rattle off all of the amazing things that you've done to be a righteous person. But much like Andrew, like, the only thing that I can think about is how little I've truly done to make a difference at all or to truly take a stand. And that most days when it really sort of start to tally that up, I'm weak. I benefit from a myriad of privileges and get to soar through the world in this magical way. And I know that a lot of people don't, and I probably don't do enough. And I do think, though, that in my 38 years here, I've become at least a better judge of when I see grace in the world. And one of the things that I loved about this show when I saw Andrew host it was that it was on display in wealth. It was everywhere. People came up here and gave of themselves in a way that was really amazing to me. And not only that, but the audience gets to take part in it too. And I give this spiel all the time, so I won't go into it. But I feel like through this show, I've gotten to get close to so many people who I think are strong and who are amazing and take little stands, big stands in their lives every single day. And I think I might have that in me somewhere. Now, I do recognize grace. I have these fantasies of dying, and I have these fantasies that play out on public transportation, and this is a very, like, socialized gender bullshit thing, but there will be like an aggressive dude who gets on the bus, and I'll spy him from wherever I'm sitting, and my hackles will raise, and I will play out 10 million different scenarios of the violent confrontation that is to come when he kicks an elderly person or assaults a woman or starts masturbating in a seat or simply just picks a fight with me because he doesn't like my shirt. And I go over this a lot in my head. It happens all the time when I'm on the bus. And I know that there's plenty of people in the audience who have that same thing happen to them. But I used to have these fantasies about dying that would play out. And I lived in this neighborhood, and I walked home from the record store a lot. And I had these visions of one night getting stabbed for whatever reason. I pictured myself, you know, this beautiful, like, black and white scene on a snowy night, and there's this gentle snow falling, and I'm bleeding out, and my girlfriend is back at the apartment with a pot of boiling water, and or tea or whatever, or she's sitting there just petting the cat on a blanket, and I'm bleeding out, and the camera pans from above me, laying out. It's like there's a record cover, Slint. That is this. It's exactly what I'm describing. So I'm not even original in my fantasy. I'm just fucking kyping it from a band I like. And in this fantasy too, I hear feedback ringing out. It's swelling. It's majestic. And I'm taking these pained final breaths. And I still have that fantasy. It still happens to me all the time. I know that somewhere in Wyoming, there is a cat skull that I have marked. It probably has a dent in it. Maybe I shattered it. I don't know. But somewhere there is a skull or fragments of a skull that I have marked, or at least the front axle of my car marked. And I think about the face of that cat in the split second before it died. Because there's no way it survived that. If my axle hit it, that was that. I got out of the car. I actually had my girlfriend drop me off at the mall the day it opened. And I had a sign that I had made myself. And I had sent out an email, and I talked to people that I worked at the record store with. And I was trying to generate, like, let's fucking do this. Let's stick it to these motherfuckers. They can't just come into our town with their Virgin megastores and their Barnes and Nobles and take away business from people who are here in the community who deserve it. I talked to friends. I was like, I'm doing this thing. I'm going to be there at 9 when the mall opens. It's on 16th Street Mall. There's going to be people everywhere. Let's do this. I showed up. My girlfriend dropped me off like I had a sack lunch and my protest sign, and I got out of the car. And my protest sign said something like, big corporations hurt mom and pops. I don't even remember what it said. And I stood there on the sidewalk all day, and what I thought would be a great opportunity to have conversations with people about, well, what does your sign mean? Like, where do you work? What do you think the city could be doing to do this? Of which I all had very well-rehearsed answers that might have crumbled, you know, under scrutiny or further discussion, but I had them, and I was ready to drag them out and put them out there for everybody. But I didn't get that chance because, for the most part, what I got was just people who ignored me. And they just went about their day. Or they wrote me off just like that I was a part of the scenery. There was nothing about what I was doing, this action, that stood out as brave or spectacular. And I did get just a little bit of the other direction, where I actually had people spitting on me who vehemently believed that any business brought to Denver benefited everybody. But I stood there diligently and was ignored and just stood there and had my sign and had my righteous indignation burning like a dying ember within me until the day was over and my girlfriend came and picked me up at the preordained time and I went home and hung out with my cats. And that was that. Thank you very much for listening.
Robert Rutherford, everybody. And I just want to say thanks on behalf of me and the show for everything you've done. Robert is the best.
The Narrators Podcast is recorded and produced by Ron Doyle.
The Narrators Podcast is brought to you by these amazing sponsors.
The great guys at Illegal Pete's and Greater Than Records, who in addition to providing rad burritos all over town, provide great local music and comedy.
Check out the appropriately named Sexy Pizza at either of their locations in Capitol Hill or Old South Pearl, or on their website, sexypizzaonline.com.
And finally, by the internet superheroes at Commerce Kitchen, who provide internet marketing solutions and search engine optimization for all your e-commerce needs. Check them out at commercekitchen.com.
For more information about the Narrators and to listen to past episodes, go to thenarratorspodcast.com. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Womp, womp, womp.